if I sit up here?
Yeah.
So, do you want, are you going to hand this mic or just?
You have to use this one because that's the only one that records.
Okay.
But right now, you so.
What you need? Yesterday when I was doing it here, he said that by me sitting here, when I'm talking normally, you know, out there, it picks it up. It's close enough to, but you do have
okay,
to.
Okay, so we do need to use this one and not that one?
Yes, because that one's recording.
So can that one be moved to me?
That one can't be moved. We didn't realize that until
he was testing. Just
and he put that one
on recording.
Oh, was he trying that one to see? I know it was an issue yesterday because I said well, it's kind of a problem because we usually use that one to pass down back and forth. So maybe, but usually, I think that's the thing before. I said every time you go into a meeting room, make sure it's got this thing taped to it. That's the one that records. So I think several of our things on Monday didn't get recorded or didn't get recorded as well. And the same thing when they ask questions afterwards. If a panelist is answering, if they were answering with that one.
This does not detach. It's not connected.
That was a little oops in the system.
Okay.
But
well,
once if you're talking, if he said, if you're talking, like I present from here. He said, I'm fine.
Oh,
I mean, if,
so
if
I'm loud in that
if
one.
If you're yep. loud, you know.
Okay.
Hi, everybody okay?
And the person, like,
we might have
to
have a disclaimer if I'm too loud.
And this is turned like this.
Oh, yeah,
pick
yeah,
it up.
Yeah. We did a little check earlier.
Did you?
Okay. Yeah, and I talked in that microphone. And there's actually a meter showing, you know, it is recorded.
It's recording.
I mean, that would be great.
So there shouldn't be an issue as long as everybody speaks.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody.
Go. Is there anything else?
Yeah.
All your
okay,
files
so
are there.
Everything
is good to go.
For me, yes. I'm good.
Very good. I'll
thank
check
you.
Back with you ladies in a bit.
Okay.
Great.
We have 7 minutes, then we'll go.
Fun this way because you know if I need to get up at 6 I feel like I'm getting up at 9. It's the going back and it'll and we're here just because we came out Friday. It'll be just long enough to where I've gotten accustomed to this time to get
back.
But
I know exactly what you mean.
SUV going down the road, and it's one of those where, of course, they're talking about like they're like choppers and cops. Do they think they're gonna get me? And apparently, when the guy finally bailed out, he went in between a couple of houses, and he's standing like this up against the house. Where's the choppers? Like right there.
Yeah.
And they're like, and he thinks he's hiding. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You total idiot. You know.
Like if I can't see.
Yeah. Yeah. And while nobody, apparently no one got hurt in the race, but all I can think about is how much gas and money was spent on the manpower to do, because it was about a 50-minute chase. How much, they should have to pay that back. He should have to, whatever he has to do, yeah. But
that's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it just, yeah.
I know that there was a long time ago a case for that lady in the and they all just found that money.
Yeah.
And I think she had,
to pay, yeah. Which, I mean, from a financial standpoint, I think the finances for that one were huge. I mean, they're not to mention, even if you just take the time that, police officers spend, it means they're not catching everything else that's going on. You've got all these resources for this one person, but they never said where the people were trying to rob. But you got to figure, if there was that much manpower, it was probably a bank, or, I mean, if it was a 7-Eleven, you really think they would have... It was in Florida. They were on the Florida Turnpike to begin with. And then they got on I-95. So, yeah. Yeah. It was huge. It looked... Oh, God, I'm glad I don't live there anymore. Yeah, I could get used to the 60-80 thing out here. That would work for me. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's shocking to go out at night, and it's more comfortable, yeah. So have y'all tried pink berries?
Oh, yeah.
But it was so good. I'm addicted now.
Is it yogurt?
It's fat-free yogurt. Yeah. It's fat-free.
It's frozen.
It's frozen.
It's more like a yogurt taste, more so than a sweet.
But all the different fruits you can get on it—that's kind of what it. Yeah.
Definitely get a little bit of a bitter type
twang.
I liked it though.
Yeah. What did you get on it?
I had some raspberries and then I had their chocolate chips on it.
Yeah. We had strawberries and blackberries and blueberries. And
wait, can you get that other than the West Coast?
I've never known.
No, I think it's a LA San
Diego. Oh, is it?
Thing.
Yeah.
No.
I live in Northern California. I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Well, it happened to me at the birthday.
I was glad we found that one on, the third night, because night one and two was Ghirardelli.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, it's not as healthy. Good, but not as healthy.
So we're going to do questions at the end.
Okay.
And then 5 minutes, 2 minute warning.
Okay. Yeah. Everything else? Okay. We need to start at 5 minutes, 2 minute warning,
and we'll just take all questions at the end. Oh, sure.
Okay. And I'll
kind of
hang here so you've
got
to
think. I'll do a real quick intro.
I'm the moderator.
Yes.
The interpreter?
I am.
Okay.
And we originally were asked to interpret this session, but then they said if you will make an announcement if there is a need for this particular one.
Okay.
And we might not be interpreting the duration of it.
First thing I do.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
morning, everyone. I think we're going to go ahead and get started. We have a really full panel this morning, full of very great topics. The first thing I'd like to ask is, does anybody need a sign language interpreter for this session this morning? Okay. I don't think anyone needs it, so. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and get to the, what's going to happen is all the presenters are going to give their presentations and we'll take questions at the end. So I'm Carrie Morgan, I'm the moderator of this session, and our first speaker is Catherine Graham, and the title of her presentation is Accessibility of Primary Physician Practice Sites in South Carolina for People with Disabilities. So I'm going to turn it over to Catherine.
Good morning. Glad to see at least a few could hang around with us until Wednesday. The objective of what we were trying to do here was to assess primary care physician sites for accessibility for people with disabilities, and I'll explain a little bit further regarding what we tended to focus on. We did focus a little bit on mobility and sensory disabilities. I won't belabor the introduction. If I had been speaking Monday morning, then maybe I would have felt this was a little more necessary, but obviously, you know, a fifth of the population has some sort of disability, and there's an issue with people receiving preventive services, which is why this was important to us. And even though the ADA was passed in 1990, we're still seeing that changes haven't been made, so we just wanted to know, you know, what was the status. Our sample sites were 68 sites over a five-year period. They were all primary care physician sites in South Carolina, distributed throughout the state. And the way that we contacted them was two different routes. The American Cancer Society has a Best Chance Network for breast and cervical screening for low-income women. That was one avenue. They have an affiliation with multiple sites around the state. And the other was Office of Rural Health. They provide low-interest loans to primary care sites for modifications, not necessarily from our standpoint accessibility. But once again, that was our contact point so that we weren't cold calling these sites, which we originally tried to do in the beginning, and that proved to be very tough. We were not going to do any self-assessment, so we weren't sending the assessment to the site. There was enough history behind that one to say that you don't get quality data that way. So a team, including myself, rehab engineer, and other people at times, would go out and do all the site visits. We used a 93-item checklist pulled from the Americans with Disabilities Act Accessibility Guidelines, ADAG. That also included an accessible scale and an accessible exam table, which are not specifically mentioned in the ADAG, but we felt like those were two very critical points that while we're there, we might as well see. We took digital photos. We did linear slope and pull weight measurements, regular fish scale, digital inclinometer for the slope, and then just a tape measure. And then we also had direct observation, and then with some of the questions, we just asked the staff, you know, what do you do in certain situations? So the statistics that we wanted to capture on all of our sites were if it's rural or urban, that makes a difference in South Carolina as it does in some of the other states, what type of practice type, whether it was owned or leased, the age of the building or the last time it was renovated in some major way, and then the number of medical doctors, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants. The total accessibility score is equal weighting to each of the 93 items on the checklist. So total accessibility, as you can imagine, isn't the best representation, but we wanted to see how that number would fare. We did have 19 separate subcategories, and you'll see some of those in a minute. Those give a little more detail, so if you're talking about parking, you can see how well each place fared in the parking category. So the results from our practice statistics, it was almost 50-50, 54% urban and 45% rural, so it was spread, you know, kind of evenly throughout our major metropolitan areas of South Carolina. And then the type of practice, if it was an independent practice, which was almost 56%, a community health center at about 28%, and hospital affiliated at 16%. You'll see in a minute how that panned out as far as how accessible they were. And then this had a big impact, which you'll see in a minute. The 66% were leasing their facility, while only about 34% owned it. And that has major implications as far as how much you can do yourself to make the changes. So the year that the buildings were built, or since the last renovation, ranged from 1950 to 2006. And then the number of active patients was huge, huge range, from 35 to about 20,000. We had some brand new startup practices, one actually that had opened, you know, a week before, and we had a couple of much larger practices in the sample. The number of medical doctors, while the mean was 3.42, it ranged from 0 to 45, but once again, the 45 was in some of your larger family practice centers, including the one that was downstairs to where we are. The nurse practitioners, the mean was 0.76, and number of PAs was 0.08. So by that, you can see that while we were looking at rural and urban, we're not looking at major urban practices most of the time, large. We're looking at very small, where you might have one or two MDs and their spouse or relative is also the front office staff, which is South Carolina. So the total mean score, that total accessibility score I was talking about, was 70% across all of these sites. Okay, not bad, but not great. 70% doesn't really, you know, sound that great to me. The subcategories that I was talking about, the 19 subcategories, these are the mean scores for those. So horizontal circulation, you know, just literally maneuvering around within the facility, 99%. That one wasn't real complicated. Whereas as you go down from path of travel, doors, water fountain, rooms and spaces, and once again, if anyone's ever looked at the ADAG, these are the category headings that you'll see on those checklists. So even through entrance, emergency egress, and ramp, you're still at 69%, which a lot of people will say, well, that's great, but, you know, if three-quarters of the time there's a ramp that I can use and a quarter not, that to me still isn't acceptable. These are the remaining subcategories. Restrooms, seats, tables, counters, the restroom stall. And then we get down into the 50, you know, around 50% less, so telephones, parking drop-off. The adjustable height exam table, it rated 44% had this table. That sounds high. Well, one of the factors is one of the groups that we were using, which was the American Cancer Society Best Chance Network, they had just distributed 10 tables to some of their sites. That was part of one of their grants. So we knew going into this, 10 already had it. So I would imagine that number, if you went out and looked at the ones around your place, would not be even remotely that high. And an adjustable height exam table means one that goes low enough, not just a powered exam table, which a lot of places had one of those in their like operating room area, treatment room. Fully accessible restroom at 8% and a wheelchair accessible scale at 1%. So obviously for us, you know, weighing is just as important. Everybody else gets weighed every time they go to the doctor. Same way for everybody else. Okay, so those were the subcategories. And once again, you have your total accessibility score, you've got your 19 subscores, but even with those subscores, it doesn't tell the whole story. You've got to get into the item specifics, which within each of those 19. Each of the 19 subcategories had anywhere from 2 to 10 things that we were measuring. Once again, you can see that on that checklist if anyone would like that. But so the parking and drop-off area, while the total for that subcategory was 46%, we looked at, is there a car space that's 8 feet wide, 5 foot aisle, and the correct number? 51%. So once again, you can go 50% of the time, that's not good enough. When you're looking at a van accessible space, which needs the 8 foot aisle, it drops even more. And then whether there's vertical signage with the correct symbols and saying van accessible when appropriate, it's down to 19%. So by breaking it up into the further specifics, you can really see what issues need to be addressed. As far as ramps, the ramps look pretty good at 69%. Okay. But a 1 to 12 slope, only 50% met that. And generally when they didn't meet it, they really didn't meet it. So that can be a dangerous situation for someone coming by themselves who uses a wheelchair, or even someone who has help pushing up and down. They can get slick when they're wet, when they're steeper. As far as the entrance goes, lever door handles, you know, 2/3 of the time were met. The fact that the door doesn't close too quickly, 2/3 of the time, so that's not bad. But the pull weight of the door being less than 5 pounds at 43% is pretty low. Sometimes you needed to be a linebacker to open it up. Seats, tables, and counters. We check the height of check-in and check-out counters, and typically only 10% of the time were they within the height range. As we all know, a lot of times they're up here, and so the person doesn't even know when you've come through the door to check in. A fully accessible restroom, and once again, that was one of the more major categories, was 12%. That sounds really low, but in a restroom, there are a lot of different things to check, and so if you miss one of them, you know, it brings your total score down. But if we're looking at just the doorways to the restrooms at 67%, we found that the tactile signage, a lot of times they had the tactile signage, but it was mounted on the door instead of on the wall on the latch side of the door. So it was an easy thing to remedy. Just pull off the double-sided sticky tape or unscrew a screw and, you know, mount it on the wall. Lever door handles, which is such an easy modification to make, they were found only 54% of the time. You can even buy the adaptations for a doorknob. So once again, a lot of these were easy fixes that we could recommend to the facilities. Clear floor space. As far as within the stall, grab bars on the back and the side, pipe protectors, which to me is such an important one. That's a risk issue of burning your legs if you're running hot water. And whether the sinks were accessible, soap and paper towel dispensers, a lot of people consider that, you know, okay, well, that's secondary, if I can at least get in and use the restroom. But we are at APHA. Hand washing is important, and if I can't get to the soap, then, you know, I personally think that's an issue and easy enough to address. Move the soap dispenser down. It's not a major, you're not busting out walls. And then when we looked at telephones, that was skewed a little bit because there were a lot of places that did not have what they considered a public telephone. They did say if someone needed help, we would make the call, and you know. But if they did have a telephone for a public place, it only was hearing aid compatible 20% of the time, and no one had a text telephone. So, you know, even for the rural areas, you would like to think that that was coming on board. They were hopefully changing that in the future. What we looked at was the practice characteristics. So whether they were rural or urban, and would it predict accessibility? Is there any way that we can kind of give an estimate of the rest of the places in South Carolina? And the only one that we found was a strong predictor was the year that it was built or major last renovation, which does make sense with a p-value of 0.0001. The modifications that were made, we gave the facilities a report back that said, here are the prioritized modifications, and we will give you grant money to make these modifications. That was from Blue Cross Blue Shield money. We've gotten pockets of money from them twice. Only 9 out of the 68 have requested and received those funds. We're thrilled that the 9 have received it, but our question was, why can't we give this money away? What's going on with the rest? Here's kind of the lump sum of the remainder. One facility did decide after this to have one full, and by full I mean you're there for 2 or 3 days, ADA assessment, because they were applying for larger grant funds. They have fully modified their place to meet every letter of the law, but not using our funds. Several used their own funds for kind of minor modifications, and that was fun too. The Office of Rural Health has given out low interest loans to some of the facilities to make modifications. So that was making me feel better that changes were happening even though they weren't with our money. There were several facilities, though, that said, we're not making changes, we haven't made changes. If they plan construction later, that was fine. We've been working with them, so when they construct their building later, it is accessible, and that's worked out well. If they planned a location change, we just made sure, take this document and make sure that your new location does meet all of the issues. If it was a lease space, that was one of the biggest problems. They didn't have a good enough relationship with their landlord, didn't feel like they could make the modification themselves. And a few actually said, you know, we don't have anyone who's said there's a problem. That's because they can't get in your building, you know, or they're just so pleased to get any medical care. The limitations, it was only primary care sites and in South Carolina. Some places did not want the assessment. We can only assume that if you didn't want it, that your accessibility score was probably lower. So we don't think it was skewed in the wrong direction. It was a modified assessment. It was only 93 items, which was still quite laborious, but it was not a full assessment. We did focus on structural and equipment mainly. With the mobility sensory, not the cognitive. We did not focus on policies and procedures, although I do think that that is a very important one, that not only do you have the height adjustable exam table, but just ensuring that your staff knows who to take into that exam room and why it's there. And then we need to look at methods to increase change. You know, we still have people that aren't changing, making modifications, and we just need to know why. Want to acknowledge the CDC grant that helped fund it, and no relationships to disclose.
We do questions now.
We're going to keep them to the end, if that's okay. Okay, so our next presenter.